Welcome into Talking Tide podcast. I'm Chase Goodbread, the sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined by Travis Ryer right here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. You have got to give that Ryer on YouTube channel a like and a subscribe immediately. Some fantastic content on there, Alabama related, SEC related, chicken salad sandwich related. On that Ryer on YouTube channel, you have got to check it out. Chase Goodbread here with you. I am reporting live from
embedded
New Jersey,
embedded,
up in Soprano Land, Travis.
Yeah. And, Holston's for lunch, right? Holston's for lunch today.
Holston's for lunch today.
They got any chicken salad at Holston's?
I had the smokehouse cheddar burger.
Yeah.
With onion rings.
Did you get the Tony? Did you get the Tony booth?
It was insisted upon me that I get onion rings because Tony was knocking some onion rings down when it all went
down. Finale,
right?
Nothing went down, Chase.
There was this hat right here from Holston's.
Very nice. Very nice.
Not complaining at all. It's going to be the only Sopranos landmark mark that I see while I'm here, which is okay. I would have liked to have seen more, but one's enough for everything that's going on. Including Alabama basketball, Travis, which of course has got a big dub over BYU. They're in the off day today. Nate Oates just finished his off day press conference. We can touch on that if you want. And then of course, the big game against Duke tomorrow night.
Yeah. And, what a performance. And I thought your column today was great, by the way, in the Tuscaloosa News. It was Sopranos based in some ways, but
had to do it.
Whacked BYU in Newark on Thursday night, and it was interesting. I thought really from the outset because it became pretty clear BYU, unlike most if not every team Alabama sees these days, wasn't intent on running them off the 3-point line. Wasn't going to play over the ball screens. Was basically going to dare Alabama to shoot the three in some ways. You got it, I guess, because this team hasn't shot the three consistently well.
Right.
But I think some of that we learned Thursday night had something to do with how teams play them. This is still a team. If you're not really going to guard them from out there, they're capable of knocking down threes. But 25, Goodbread?
Picked the wrong night. They picked the wrong night. 25
threes? I thought there was some symmetry in that, too, and you'll get this as an old head, because it was Loyola Marymount that previously held the record for most threes in an NCAA tournament game. And that was in 90 when Alabama lost to Marymount in the Sweet 16. There was even some symmetry there that Alabama came back around and whacked Marymount where that 3-pointer record was concerned.
Wimp just had to slow it down, didn't he?
It's still too soon. Yeah. It's still too soon for me to talk about that 90 Sweet 16. Look at the NBA guys Alabama had on that roster, and they're slowing it down against a bunch of insurance salesmen, you know? I don't even want to talk about that. Let's stay positive.
Sure. Yeah,
Alabama just incredible on the offensive end. Mark Sears, first team All-American. Guess we're going to start calling him second weekend Sears because really cranked it back up in the 16. And, you know, we'll talk about Duke a little bit here in a minute. But what was your surprise level maybe in how BYU went about its business in defending Alabama?
It reminded me a little bit of Brian Kelly insisting on playing two deep safeties with that Notre Dame defense against Alabama in that 2012 championship game, was it?
Yeah, 2013 champion. Yeah, 2013 champion. We were there, Miami Gardens. And that was a Notre Dame team. Probably kind of like in terms of matchups like BYU in basketball was going up against in Alabama last night. Yeah, two deep safety against that team. It wasn't going to work.
And wouldn't come out of it. And BYU didn't come out of it.
Second half, I'm thinking they got to start getting over the ball screen. They got to start getting over the top of screens.
Right.
They have got to just run Alabama off the three-point line. Really didn't do it.
Nope. They picked their poison, and they picked the wrong poison. And it wasn't – and obviously Sears had been cold.
Yeah.
I think his streak over six games entering the BYU game was 5 for 35, which is icy cold, of course. but he ends up going 10 out of 15. You kind of knew it early. When he hit his first, he missed his first one. He nailed his second one. When he nailed his second one,
yeah,
I saw a little bit of a fist pump there. I don't know. I certainly didn't think he was going to make 10 of them, but I had a feeling it was going to be his night to break out, and it more than was. And not only that, I mean, Aiden Holloway couldn't miss.
Holloway, Chris Youngblood.
Youngblood couldn't miss.
These guys are able to kind of just really sight it and set their feet or catch it in the pocket and shoot without much in the way of pressure.
Yeah.
Again, still very capable team when you talk about those three guys specifically of getting into double-digit threes. And we've got some live viewers here in the chat, Chase checking in, Joseph Troncow, Fear the Three. Yeah, I don't think, though, Joe, that Duke's going to take that same approach tomorrow night. JM12 Green says, can't blame BYU because we were pretty average from three lately. We talked about that at the outset. I think that's exactly what BYU thought. I think BYU looked at it like, we think we can drive the basketball and get a lot of twos against this team because this Alabama defense doesn't really step in front of the ball.
Right.
And I think they were probably correct in that assessment. And then they also figured, you know what, maybe this team really can't shoot the three and we'll let them shoot it. And if they have a great shooting night, then we're in trouble. But the numbers over stretches of the season pointed to the possibility, at least, of even against that kind of approach, Alabama not having that kind of night.
It was, they had three guys in the zone at least, right? I mean, it was damn near surreal. Second half, they just kept hitting them.
Yeah.
And they end up with 113 points, broke an NCAA tournament record for not only threes made, but threes attempted. 51 attempts is a tournament record.
Oh, I think a good bread. I think a good bread when those 51 threes go up, because good bread is a back to the basket guy. You know,
yes,
he doesn't like those 51 threes so good. But
you know, if they go in, they go in. That's for sure. It's, you know, it's when they get bullied around that you'll hear me chirp about that. Not when this happens, right?
Yeah.
And that's happened before. You know,
it has. They
play those games down in the 60s and 70s on the plains and in Knoxville and elsewhere, Travis, right? Things don't always go for you. But they certainly had it going for BYU, and now they turn to Duke in the Elite Eight. That game is going to tip off at 8:49 p.m. Eastern time.
Knew it was going to be the primetime game Saturday night. I mean, you knew
Saturday
that.
Night. I might be headed to Yankee Stadium tomorrow at 1 p.m. to catch Yankees Brewers and then hustle back.
Yeah.
Travis,
yeah.
That's
adventurous.
Yeah.
That's adventurous.
A little ambitious.
Ambitious, adventurous.
Yeah.
As long as we keep the bada bing off your itinerary, I think you're probably okay to make it to the old, to the old basketball game. Yeah. You know, I think you can do it with the mass transit. You know, are you going to mass transit everywhere? Are you going to subway? I mean, how's that going
to
work?
So the word is, from my Uber driver, we need to get to, there's New Jersey train transit into the Penn Station.
Yeah.
Right. Pick up Penn Station in New York City, and then from there, I'm told we need to get on the D train. D is in Dahl.
Yeah, and, to the Bronx, to the boogie down.
That gets us to the Bronx, and then from there, hopefully we get dumped off, and it's a walk, and here we are, and, you know, let's roll.
So what about this matchup with Duke tomorrow night, just on the surface? I mean, obviously, Cooper Flagg. I mean, that's where it starts. The guy is phenomenal. He was everything he's been billed to be really throughout the season. Certainly was that in the Blue Devils win over Arizona on Thursday night. You're going to have two first team All-Americans on the floor together between Mark Sears and Cooper Flagg. And so much of the focus is going to be on those two guys, but I think it could once again come down to, what does Alabama get from an Aiden Holloway? What does it get from a Chris Youngblood? You know, Grant Nelson in this game. The matchups are going to be fascinating because who guards Cooper Flagg, right? Who's in that role? Is it Grant Nelson? does Mo Diabate take on a bigger role in trying to match up with this larger Duke team? Although, you know, BYU had decent size, nothing like what Alabama's going to see on Saturday night.
Yeah, a couple of thoughts on that. Nate Oates was asked about it. He said, look, the guy's going to get his points. He's going to do his damage. He's so good in every facet of the game that if you take something away, he's still going to be productive in some other way. And so Oates' comment on it was, we just got to switch it up on him and see if we can get him off balance, because if we feed him the same kind of defense for 40 minutes, he's gonna beat it worse and worse as the game goes.
He's going to play on the ball too, which makes it interesting because he's 6'9". You know, yeah. He reminds me a lot of Grant Hill when Grant Hill was a Duke Blue Devil, especially as Hill worked through his career at Duke and what he was asked more and more to do to kind of try to lead that Duke team, especially, I think, the one in 94. I believe it was the 94 Duke team lost to Arkansas and Charlotte in the national final. But, again, Con Knipple, the freshman for Duke. You know, it wasn't just Flag on Thursday night. You know, Knipple went for 20. This is a guy Alabama was right there in it with. As a recruit, and there's just so many great storylines too. You think about, if you want to, you can go back to Nate and Bobby Hurley, you know, up at Buffalo. Bobby, of course, an all-timer where Duke basketball is concerned. But in terms of on the court, I think the approach again that Alabama saw on the offensive end from BYU, that's not going to be Duke tomorrow night. Duke's going to come at them on the three-point line and feel like, hey, we feel like we can guard these guys. The thing about Duke defensively is they're going to be team-oriented in how they go about it. So when you get to the paint, they've got a 7-2 freshman from the Sudan that's you know, had some foul trouble in the past. You know, you're going to have to deal with more than just the guy who is initially on you if you're looking to get into the paint, get to the hole.
Yeah, in terms of defense on Flag, I do think Nelson and Diabate got to be two of the primary guys involved in that. Nelson is, Nelson is handsy around the rim, right? He can make you adjust a shot around the rim, but he don't keep you off the block like Diabate. So if you want to keep Flag off the block and make Flag actually shoot a short two-pointer, then you put Diabate on him. Grant Nelson is a guy who's going to let him get to the rim more so than Diabate. But at the rim, Nelson can be a little bit more of a harasser, right?
Yeah, he can. And with Flag, he's a facilitator. And at times it feels like he likes that more than being sort of the primary scorer. Now, we saw him more in takeover mode against Arizona on Thursday night. And if you're Alabama, you almost want to force that to be the case, because if he's able to start the game as a facilitator and kind of stay in that mode for an elongated stretch, that probably means that Tyrese Proctor and some of these other guys are getting theirs. And that's the one thing you can't have happen. That goes back to Nate's point. If Flag goes for 30, he goes for 30, but you don't want Knipple going for 20 or some of these other guys around Flag. Proctor to have big nights on Saturday night. If those three have big nights together, probably not going to like the outcome.
No doubt. And another point that Oates made is it's one thing to give up 30 to Flag. It's another thing to give them 30 and give them 7 assists and give them 10 trips to the line or 12 trips to the line where he's drawing fouls on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just don't let him take something away from the guy.
Right. Yeah, you have to. But boy, what a fascinating matchup, because Duke, as we know, has been the preeminent program in college basketball really over the last, gosh, I'll say the last 25 years for sure, a quarter century at least, going back to K. Now, it's been a while since Duke has won a national championship, and I don't think even with this Duke team, a lot of the country looks at it and says, yeah, that team can beat Florida, because as we saw also on Thursday night, Florida Gators don't look to be losing any steam here moving on to the Elite Eight themselves.
No, they don't at all. I think a couple of thoughts on this matchup too. Duke's length on defense, I wonder how that's going to play against Mark Sears. Duke obviously can defend the rim extremely well, but the guards are long, right? Yep. And so
Knepel's 6'7". Yeah, now, yeah. I don't know if you're going to put him on Mark Sears, but, you know, they've done a nice job in the portal themselves, Duke has. And so you're right. The matchups, it's going to be length, but then they've got some physicality. They brought in Sion James from Tulane. Have you seen this guy? I mean, he is 6'6", 220 pounds, looks like a college tight end. I mean, he's ripped. Mm-hmm. And so they've got some physicality to go with it, too. It would seem like James and Youngblood, just in terms of physical attributes, would be more the matchup. But some things we're still going to have to wait until Saturday night to find out.
We've seen games against teams that got a lot of length on defense that frustrate Sears. Those are the kinds of defenses where maybe he doesn't do so well at the rim, right? And to me, we barely saw Mark Sears shoot a floater against BYU. I think we might see some floaters from him against Duke because that's how you deal with that length, right?
Yeah, and also for Phylon, too, this has been a little bit of a problem for him as a young player, making the right read once you go off the dribble. What I do think is with the way Duke plays defensively, Sears, Phylon, Holloway, when they put it on the floor and they get to the paint, might be better served in a lot of instances looking for the pitch to the perimeter and creating open looks and sort of negating that length that way. Break down the defense, get into the paint, make good reads, and, you know, get yourself some good looks on the offensive end.
Pace of play also is going to be interesting too, Travis. I asked myself that about that just a little while ago. Obviously, BYU was willing to go up and down with Alabama. That was not a good recipe for the Cougars. In terms of total possessions per game, Alabama is number one in the country at like 78 plus.
Yeah.
Duke is 280th in the country. They're toward the bottom.
Yeah.
And I asked Oates about that, like the difference between going against BYU one night and then two nights later you're taking on a Duke team that's not going to go up and down on you so much. He said they will run opportunistically and they will hurt us in a big way if even in those opportunistic moments we're not playing good transition defense.
Yeah, and Malak is the 7'2" freshman and he can run the floor at 7'2". So they do walk it up maybe more than some Duke teams in the past with Flag on the ball doing that at 6'9". But absolutely, they are still athletically gifted enough. And Alabama at times has struggled in transition defense. Nate Oates has pointed that out on a consistent basis. So that really is what you're wondering about Alabama going into this game. Stylistically, both these teams will probably be, I think, comfortable with one another. But Duke, I think, is going to be even more comfortable in a half-court game,
right?
Because of their size and their ability to kind of break you down off the dribble, and really as much Alabama's inability at times to defend at a high level in those situations.
You're a close observer of Duke basketball, much more so than me. So I'll ask you about this, Travis. So, you know, a lot of people lean on possessions per game as the best indicator of tempo. And I can kind of understand that, but it's an imperfect statistic because your schedule can impact that too.
Right.
In your opinion, is Duke sitting at 280th out of 355 teams in terms of total possessions? Is that more about Duke or is that more about how the ACC plays the game?
It's a great question. It's actually a surprising stat to me because whenever I've thought of Duke basketball, I've thought of them in terms of playing at a faster pace, you know, kind of embracing pushing the basketball. Because think of the teams you really think about when you think of Duke. You think about Bobby Hurley pushing it. You know, you think about those type of teams that had that type of success. But no, they've always been very comfortable though in the half court, and feel like they can create offense off of their defense. You know, they've always been a proud strong man-to-man basketball program. That really was the case under Kay. I don't think it's changed all that much under Shire. So that's a part of this too. You know, something Alabama did a good enough job of against BYU, not great, but good enough, was take care of the basketball. Duke with that length, that's where it will pick up the pace. If it's able to force some turnovers, that's when it will look to run, because frankly, there are some guys on this Alabama team this season that you'll have noticed, whether it's a missed shot that a long rebound comes off and transition the other way off of that, or a turnover. Some, you know, they'll drop their head for a minute and then try to get back. It's too late. You can't do that. You know, you have to transition quickly to defense. And that's where Duke, I think, will try to exploit Alabama, especially if it's able to get the Crimson Tide into, you know, double-digit turnovers. Alabama's, I think, still going to get really good looks, because I think they're going to get the ball into the paint. I don't know how much success they'll have scoring in the paint.
Right.
But they're going to get the ball into the paint and be able to create some opportunities off of that if they make the right plays. If they don't, they could set themselves up for 15, 16 turnovers and being on the wrong end of the stick where points off turnovers are concerned.
Yeah. And to your point on turnovers, Alabama doesn't get them on defense. They just don't.
Nope.
And so
they're a bad defensive team. Let's just say it, man. They're bad.
It's one thing. It's not so bad to turn the ball over 15 or 16 times if your defense is at least giving you 12, right? Yeah. But
not,
when you turn it over 16 times and your defense forces four turnovers, you got a serious problem.
Yeah, and, you know, the way you can cover for that is by scoring 113 points and making 25 threes.
Yeah.
But I they're going to have to be as good defensively as they can be. I've said it all year. And I'm almost to the point of being willing to donate to an NIL for Nate, for any guy he goes and gets this offseason that'll take some damn charges. I'll write a $100 check, good bread. I'm on record. On record right now on Talking Tide.
How about a Talking Tide sponsorship on that?
Yeah, well, we'll kick in a C note.
Whoever gets the most
guy he goes and gets that'll take a damn charge, I'll $100. Yeah, we'll turn this into a telethon right here. You know, we have to. You know,
they haven't taken a charge since Herb Jones, have they? Herb Jones was the last guy to take a charge for Alabama?
He leads Alabama in charge takes this year, and he's been out of eligibility for 3 years. But, you know, look, they're playing with confidence now. And so I don't discount this team at all. I know they're a 5.5, 6-point underdog, I guess, according to Vegas. I'm not telling you what to do with your money, but if you told me you were taking Alabama to at least cover, I would say that's probably a pretty good idea where that spread is concerned, because Arizona, Caleb Love went off. So why can't Mark Sears have that kind of game against this Duke team? 35 for Love last night. And, you know, even with Flag going off, Duke wins by 7. So, you know, comparative scores, that type of stuff is a dangerous exercise. I understand that, but I totally believe Alabama's in a good spot going into this game.
Recapping again, Alabama takes on Duke in an Elite Eight game Saturday night, 8:49 Eastern Time PM tip-off, and Alabama, of course, trying to reach the NCAA Tournament Final Four for the second consecutive year. It's hard to believe that sentence is even coming out of my mouth, Travis.
Nate Oates is the – and you wrote it today, and I agree. He's the guy. You know, I know, you know, depending on your age or nostalgia, your formative years, all those things, who your favorite might be, I understand that. But the best to ever do it at the University of Alabama is Nate Oates, and that's – he's already got the most tournament wins
Alabama coach. He's 11-4 in the tournament.
Yeah.
He's 11-4 in the tournament.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was at Buffalo.
Yeah.
At Alabama, he's 11-4 in the NCAA tournament. That's crazy.
Nathaniel Justin Oates is at the top. And in the words of Nature Boy Ric Flair, you don't have to like it, but you had better learn to love it. because it's the way it is.
It's the best thing going
today. Yeah.
Yeah, Doggy Tide Podcast here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Be sure to give it a like and a subscribe. We've just got a few minutes left here in the program. Travis, I guess we'll turn to Alabama football here for a quick minute before we close things.
How about Alabama football, just an afterthought? I know it's spring football, but it's wild, isn't it?
Yeah. Even last year, even with it being Kalen DeBoer's first spring, yeah, Alabama going to the Final Four buried Alabama football spring practice last year.
It did. You're right. And, I mean, it's interesting. Alabama coming off, I guess, its first full scrimmage. We heard from Kalen DeBoer yesterday. He talked about how they're really doing scrimmage work throughout the spring, which is the case at other places, too. You're doing 11-on-11 in controlled situations. But in terms of just full-scale scrimmages, seems like so much of the talk lately has been about spring games going away, but I don't know how many teams these days, because of, kind of taking care of injuries, trying to protect guys. You have to protect guys more than ever because you don't know if their backup is going to be there in the fall, right? Because their backup might be starting at Vanderbilt. So you have to have an even more heightened approach to protecting your top guys, even if they're probably able to go. You probably feel that more than you would have previously.
I'm a little bit hesitant to buy into the narrative that spring game cancellations or spring games being dumbed down is a big trend yet. I might get a year from now, I might answer this question differently. Right now, I'm not ready to say it's a trend, and this is why. Because if you look at the schools that have shit canned their spring game this year, it's all for different reasons. It's not for the same reason, right? FSU did it for stadium renovations. Nebraska did it because they were worried about the portal opening right after spring game, which is a legit concern, right? Texas had a Sark's reason was wear and tear on bodies because we just played whatever the hell they played, 16, 17 games.
I'll buy that more than poaching. Too. I'm gonna buy that more than I'll buy poaching. They poaching us.
Right. But when everybody's on board with the same reason to dump spring games, then it looks like a trend to me, right? But when everybody's pointing at something different, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I think some places, if we're being honest, they would rather just take the money it takes to put on a spring game towards NIL. If it costs a school $300,000 to $500,000 even to put on a spring game, they probably rather keep that in their coffers, with what's happening and what's still coming down the pike.
What about that restaurant and bar coffer though? That one doesn't like it so good. No. They're going down that spring
game. No, the Chamber of Commerce, Carl, he doesn't like that so good.
Walt likes full blown spring game. Yeah. I promise. I've never
interviewed Walt once. Shit, Walt wants an April Iron Bowl. What are you talking about? Home and away. They get one and we get one.
Well,
yeah. That's what they're looking for. But no, I mean, for Alabama, it was interesting coming out of the scrimmage. I think what I liked, at least from what you could gather, was that Jalen Hale coming off that knee injury looked like he made a play or two. And then some of the young guys, Latier Brooks, Justin Hill, they've got some young guys that look like they're going to impact this football team, and understandably so. And then the quarterback situation with Ty Simpson and the young guys, how that's going to play out. Doesn't sound like there's been any seismic kind of movement in that regard. I know there's been some reports and stuff that, this guy's surging to the lead. They're still in shorts, and we hear some of that.
Right.
But, it's that time where we get more into real scrimmage work and maybe we can get some more real info. The biggest thing is right now, again, for some of the reasons we just talked about, you like to hear injuries. You don't like to hear about injuries. And it sounds like they're in pretty good shape with that right now.
There's also this factor, like I guess we'll assume Proctor's not going to be a go, right? In any kind of spring game situation.
I don't think so. No.
So if they're extremely thin or shorthanded, I can specifically remember Nick Saban saying one time that one of the dumbest things he did at LSU spring wise was he gave in to the tradition of having a game when he didn't have a tackle. He didn't have an offensive tackle, and his edge rushers basically ruined the spring game.
That was like Tim Williams and those guys. Yeah, they destroyed the spring game that year.
Right.
You know what I want? I want, like, they had that one year when Perkins was, I think, head coach, and they actually brought back former players to play the current roster. That's about the damnedest thing I've ever seen. You know, I mean, Kenny Stabler at damn quarterback, you know, with Cornelius Bennett.
Is there video in there? I need to see video.
There is video on YouTube.
Oh, I got to find
it. I think it was Joab Thomas was the school president. And he took a snap at running back and got, like, rocked by Biscuit, you know? Yeah. You want to get my interest? Let's do that. Yeah, you know, let's have AJ McCarron at quarterback. You know, yeah. Bring him back. Let's
suit up the staff at UWA.
Yeah. You know, yeah, McElroy. You know, in there,
Damian Square and Blake Sims can all come back.
Yeah, I don't know if the owners in the NFL would allow that. So good these days. Yeah, that just tells you how different everything has changed. Great. You know, when you had some NFL guys playing in the damn spring game. You
used
know.
To be NFL versus college all-star game.
Yeah, there was. In Jacksonville, Florida, there was. And Pops worked it one year. It was actually the one he worked was the AFL all-stars before the merger against the college all-stars. And he may have pilfered one of those game balls. Oh. He flattened it so he could get it in the back of his pants to get out of there. But before he did that, he got like Joe Willie Namath to sign it. He had all these AFL stars sign his pilfered football, and he was proud of that thing, man. He pumped it up, put it on the mantle, you know, Joe Willie Namath right there. That's his guy. That's Pops's guy, Joe Willie. And I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and he left the house or did something. I got that ball down, took it out in the street and punted it, you know, in the street. Came home, about lost his mind, you know, that
asphalt scratches.
Precious.
All over it.
Oh, it was just gone. You know, you might've been able to see Joe. That was it. Just killed
it. Fantastic.
But yeah, the olden days, good bread.
I've probably got, I don't know, 30, 40 bucks in my wallet right now. I would bet all of them. I'd bet every dollar in there right now that Pops was in attendance. I bet you know. If you don't know, I want you to ask him. I'll bet you Pops was in attendance for old man Irsay landing in the helicopter on the 50-yard line to say the Colts are coming to Jacksonville. They had like 50,000 people in the house just to say, hey, we're so glad to have the Colts in Jacksonville. Was Pops?
Then he moved them to Indianapolis in the middle of the night. I don't know if I went with Pops, but I was there. I was one of the lemmings. I was one of the lemmings. Yeah, one of the 50,000 plus lemmings.
If you were there, Pops was there.
Yeah, probably was with Pops. I was there, though. I remember it. Yeah.
I wasn't there, but –
a little kid. Yeah, it was. Oh, that awful Bob Irsay.
He broke some hearts, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He manipulated some like 8-year olds like me cause.
Did they really have 50K in that house?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember. It was, you know, everything but a football game happened in there. Mayor of the city, Jake Godbold getting off the helicopter. Brutal. Suckers, we were born every day. All right, good bread. I'm gonna let you get back to that NYC life.
Yes,
and you know, we'll be keeping tabs on you. You bear watching, as a late friend of ours used to say.
Might be required. I get
it. All right.
For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News. We will talk to you next time, right here on Talking Tide.